Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when I am on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, and I am your host, Fran Lewis, and today's show is going to be sizzling and hot. You just wait and see when this heats up. The heat from the fire permeated throughout the house as the victims remained strapped in place in their chairs. That alone will get you to read the prologue. Flames burning, the screams heard, the event videoed, and the result shocking. You can feel the intensity of the heat. You could smell the burning flesh as the opening prologue takes readers, the victims, and anyone visualizing the scene to new heights. Author Vincent Zandri created a prologue so haunting, so devastating and horrifying and graphically depicted that you, the reader, will see it in your eyes and shake and feel the heat from the flames as you read The Caretaker's Wife. Hi, how you doing? That was from my review, by the way, the first paragraph, everybody.
Hi, Fran.
Hi.
I wrote that, huh?
You sure did. You sure did. Well, you wrote that, but that was the first part of my review, and I thought that was original. And
yes, it was. Love your review.
Definitely. So, what made you decide this novel? And then I read your thing that it's on the postman always rings twice. How did you decide that?
Well, it was funny. Paulus Books called me, and they're like, "Oh, hey, dude, we're setting up our spring schedule. So, where's your book?" And I was like, "I thought I was done with my contract. I don't have another one, you know." And he's like, well, and, you know, it's Jason Penter, right? You know, like, and he's a friend as well. And so he's like, I even need the pitch now, like, so that I can get it out to the distributor, you know, however they work or whatever. But, you know, for their catalog. And so, like, I don't know. I was just like, all right, give me 5 minutes and I'll give it a think, right? And so I just came up with High Plains Drifter meets The Postman Always Rings Twice. And so I emailed that over to him, and he's like, awesome, I love it. It's all I need. And so then I proceeded to start writing the book. And I had just gotten back from being way up north with a buddy of mine who has a cabin on a lake way up near Plattsburgh. And he owns all that property, and he's like, I need help clearing the trails. And so another buddy of mine went up and helped them clear the trails, and so, like, I got all that into the book, and the chainsaws and all that crap. So, you know, life imitating art, or art imitating life, I don't know.
That was a painful scene, let me tell you.
Oh, it was.
This scene sets the tone for what, you know, what was going to happen next. So tell us about Kingsley to our listeners and how he might mirror Frank in the other novel.
Yeah, Kingsley, like I said, like, I wanted it to be almost like an homage to The Postman Always Rings Twice. And as you know, in that book from James M. Cain, it's like the you know, the beautiful, ravaging blonde or whatever is married to the old Greek. You know, James M. Cain calls him the old Greek. And so, you know, I didn't want to copy anything or anything like that, but I knew I had to, like, have, like, a very attractive woman, younger woman, married to, like, an older, you know, guy who's just sort of a jerk, and, like, you know, and, like, however did she marry this guy? You know, like, what does he have in her that he made her marry him? And, you know, you have to read the book to figure it out, but, so Kingsley, I just picture Kingsley, like, you know, like, being portrayed by, like, Ray Liotta or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, and so,
yeah.
I just automatically assumed he was a mobster from Queens, and that's how I went with it from there.
Well, he sounds like a mobster from somewhere.
Yeah.
So, Well, you named her Cora. So tell us
I
how
named her
name
Cora.
How come?
I named her Cora. That I took directly from Postman Always Rings Twice. That was part of my my homage. But that was it. But she was a cop in New York City, and she got involved in some let's call them dubious circumstances, and she needed a lawyer. And even though Kingsley is a mobster, his family wanted him to work for like that Southern District in New York, so that he would, you know, like it would give him like street cred or whatever. Anyway, so he like represents her and whatever, and they win, but he saves her pension and all that stuff. He can't be a cop anymore, and in return, he makes her like sleep with him and all that stuff and marry him. So he kind of has her over the barrel.
A big barrel too, not a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's really a despicable character, you know.
Well, she's not stupid either, that's for sure.
Right.
So
no, she's not.
He comes home and his family is gone, so how does he react, and who is Teresa? This guy is scared. It's like he gives you the willies, let me tell you.
Yeah. My guy comes home. Kingsley comes home. Actually, I'm confusing. Cora's husband's not Kingsley. Kingsley's the narrator. I'm sorry. But anyway, Kingsley comes home, and his wife and daughter have left him, right? And, like, he expected them to greet him with open arms because he just got out of the joint after, like, almost a two-year stint in the joint. The reason he went to prison is because his wife was cheating on him with this carpenter who was doing renovations in the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he threw the carp. This is an interesting story for you. Yeah, the carpenter's like a foot taller than him, right? But he didn't care. He like walloped the carpenter and threw him through a bar window out onto the sidewalk. And
that's
it didn't
so cool.
end it there. He proceeded to walk out the door and start bashing the guy's head on the pavement. And
that's
he could have
cool.
killed him. You know where I got that story from?
Where? I don't know.
My grandfather did exactly that to somebody in the 1950s.
That's cool.
and actually, at that time, my mother's going to kill me for saying this, but anyway. But at that time, like, the local cops came to the house, and they're just like, you know, in those days, like, they could give you a warning and be like, don't ever let it happen again. You know, stay away from that place for like a year or two, right? But in today's day and age, you get arrested, obviously, and you go away. So that happened. He comes home and the wife and daughter are gone, along with like he was counting on like $5,000 cash being stashed in, you know, in the closet. She's taking that and whatever. So he figures like there's nothing left for him there at the house. So he remembers like this peaceful place up north called Loon Lake Inn.
Yeah.
And he calls the place and it turns out they're open. And so he's hoping he can get by on his credit card. And he goes up there and he's like, the only thing left for him is he's a writer, and so the only thing left for him is to try to write a new book and try to get it published and try to get his career back in order. So he decides to go up to Loon Lake Inn and start all over again. And that's how he meets Cora and her evil husband.
I know, that's scary. So they take Sonny in. So why does she convince Sonny to let him stay, even though he's got no credit card? She liked him right away, didn't she? She's no good.
Yeah, she liked him right away. Yeah, just to back up everybody, Kingsley's not the mobster. Sonny's the mobster. I got it confused.
Yeah.
But, she's like, you know, don't worry about it, you know, like, and he's like, and she's like, you know, we'll help you out. And Sonny's like, well, you know, I could use a little help around the place because Sonny's the caretaker, right? And the owner.
Yep, he is. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, Sonny's the mobster from New York. So he's like, I could use a little help around the joint. And so Kingsley's got no choice, really, you know, because he's going to be living there. And so he decides to help him out. And in the process of all this, Kingsley and Cora are really falling for each other. They're like, the sexual tension is building, right? And
yep,
it builds over
it.
Time. Yep, and it builds and builds and builds and builds until finally, you know, they they can't resist one another, and they come together inside his cabin, but then suddenly they hear a voice outside, and it's Sunny. And so from that point on, Kingsley's like, I think he heard us. And she's like, don't worry about it. I don't think so, but whatever. And so, but from that point on, she's like, I really want to get rid of Sonny. What can we do to get rid of him? And they devise whatever happens in the woods. And, you know, you have to read it to know, to find out.
I really thought that was so cool. I mean, what a clever way to do something. Yes, I did. And I said, you know what? In real life, sometimes you got to follow what the book says. You just never know.
I know.
It's scary. You know, I read so many of these, and I wonder sometimes if somebody actually reads one of them and tries out how to murder somebody as a result of reading the book. Oh my God! Yeah.
I know. I've got one going now. It's amazing. We started the conversation about art imitating life and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I got one going. I've got one going now in the Steve Jobs series. And he's called in to investigate two back-to-back murders whereby the victims were killed by hydrochloric acid poisoning. But they got it. Each one lives in separate houses, but each of them got it by pouring a glass of water from the tap. And there was hydrochloric acid in it, and it ate them alive, like, on the spot.
Ooh.
And so, I know, and so, like, you know, you almost think like, well, that's a little bit far-fetched or whatever, but like, and then suddenly, like, you know, I'm like 100 pages into it, right? And like, then suddenly I start hearing about like these deaths in the Dominican Republic where like,
yeah,
people staying in unrelated places drank something out of the Frigi bar and they're like dropped dead on the spot. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm not saying that's, you know, that's a terrible thing. I feel bad for all those families and everything, but like, all right, because it kind of lends verisimilitude to what I'm doing here, you know.
I know. It's scary. You know, it's funny because you get coffee or you get water from someplace, and you never know if it's good or bad. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sure.
I learned where not to get coffee, and I learned not to drink tap water anywhere or everything.
No, I don't drink tap water anywhere. Yeah, anywhere.
No, I only drink
even
bottled
in my own
water.
Home,
no, neither do I. So Cora wants Kingsley to do, and what happens when he agrees, and why? What exactly does she want him to do besides, you know, having some, the, you know, horizontal mambo fun?
Wait, what was that? Horizontal what?
Mambo.
I'm just making it say it again. You don't know about those things, Fran.
No, not me, but
you're
not me, but
you're
my,
a nice girl.
I've heard it in books. I would hear it.
Oh, okay.
Not me. Not with my mother. Are you kidding?
No.
Mother? Definitely not.
Sister Mary Fran.
Yeah, actually, you're right about that. That's another story. Sister, yeah, exactly that, right. You got it.
All right. Well, that's how I picture you.
Okay.
Yeah. So she wants him to. You know, it's no secret. She wants him to do away with Sonny.
That's a good idea.
And I've actually explored this in a couple of books, but it's the idea that never gets old, you know. It's just how you do it that gets, you know, like how inventive can you be? But anyway, so he has this idea that he's like, all right, we're going to go clearing trails tomorrow. And he says, like, I promise you I'll figure out a way to make it happen at that time. And so, like, I don't know if you've ever cleared a trail, but, like, it's hard work, and, like, your chainsaw's all over the place, and, like, you're sweating up a storm and all sorts. And you got to have, like, one guy carrying gas and oil, the other guy carries the saw, and you have to bring the gas and oil in with you because the saw runs out of gas and oil, and you're in the middle of the woods, and you have to fill it back up again. So, anyway, so Kingsley's carrying the gas and oil, and Sonny's running the saw, and they run out of gas. And Sonny's like, all right, gas and oil, man, fill her up, you know. And so, like, Sonny takes a rest while Kingsley fills everything up. But what Kingsley does is he also rubs oil all over the handle so that it gets extra slippery. And so Sonny starts the thing up, and it drops right out of his hands. And he's like, Jesus, Kingsley. He's like, what did you do? He's like, I could have – that could have killed me, you know, if it could have cut my leg off or something. And then Kingsley picks it up, and he says, just like this, you mean? And he runs the spinning blade right through his leg. And what he's trying to do is he knows that, like, if he cuts the femoral artery in the thigh, that once that's severed and being all the way out in the woods like that, if you cut this femoral artery, you're going to bleed out in 5 minutes, you know, because there's it's one of the major arteries in the body. So, and he's like, no, you know, and it'll work too, because, you know, no one's around for like a mile. They're in the woods, you know, they can't go for help. And so he's like, it's perfect because it'll look like an accident, right? Accidents like that happen all the time. So anyway, he does this, and then he pretends to, like, you know, help him out, help, you know, like, I'll go for help, boss, I'll go for help. And he's like, he'll be dead by the time we get back. But lo and behold, Sonny's still alive when they get back to him.
I know. So tell us about Bunny and why she's caught in the middle. And then this, the blackmail from Big Billy, he wants her to pay for her, what she already owns. That was upsetting me.
Yeah, there's a place in Williams, and, you know, remember I was telling you my buddy's place up north? It's based on a town called, excuse me. It's based on a town up north. I don't know if anybody's ever been there, any of your people, but it's called Willsboro. And there's the only bar, there's two bars in town, but the only real good bar is called Bunny's Place. And so Bunny is based on a real character who runs this bar up there. And she's, you know, just like the bunny in the book, she knows karate and all this sort of stuff. And she works at a dojo. So all that stuff. But what's happening is Sonny didn't just buy up the Loon Lake Inn. He wants to buy up the entire town. And he wants to turn the entire town into, like, almost like the Las Vegas of the Adirondacks, you know? And what he wants to do at the same time is bring his mobster people up there, and they want to sell drugs to the kids who will be there and all that sort of stuff. So what they're trying to do is the mob is trying to take over this town and get rid of everybody. And they're trying to buy everybody out on the, you know, like, for just pennies on the dollar. And if you don't, if you don't agree to sell out, like, bad things are going to happen to you, thus the prologue. And so, like, he's got these goons that go around town, like, collecting, quote, rents from the businesses. And so this guy, Big Billy, who, you know, he's a biker. He's like the big bully of the town. He goes around collecting, you know, blood money from people. And it just so happens that our boy Kingsley witnesses Billy trying to get a payoff from Bunny at her bar. And it ends up, Kingsley ends up making the payoff. And once outside, Kingsley is actually confronted by this Big Billy guy who's, like, got to be like 150 pounds more than him. But Kingsley just got out of the joint, and plus he's a tough guy. And all he did in the joint was lift weights. And so, like, he puts Billy down. And, like, the sheriff witnesses this. Now we're getting towards, like, the High Plains Drifter part of our program, right? And so the sheriff witnesses this, and later on he approaches Kingsley, and he says, like, you're the only person in this town to have stood up to Big Billy and his mobster crew and a crew of state troopers who are, like, on the take from them as well. And he's like, we want you to help us. We want you to help us save the town. Yeah, and he's like, you know, what you need, Sheriff, is a pair of balls, right? You know, and he's like, no, I can't, you know, because the sheriff's like between a rock and a hard place, you know. He's got to abide by the law, but he also needs to save his town. So he kind of, you know, he's like, he offers up Kingsley $100K if he can do it, if he can put the monsters down. So it's kind of an interesting play, because here, like, Kingsley has just essentially performed a murder or an attempted murder, and yet the law wants them to work for him. So.
And the law wants the guy dead, too. They don't care.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just got an email and I could, you know, lose a little help here. Seriously. Seriously. So Jeff Woods, what if he wanted to join forces with Jonathan? And tell us about their plan. And how did Jonathan create the accident that started what happens next? And it's scary, let me tell you. You guys got to read this because you're going to shake and you have nightmares, and it's good for you. Seriously.
Yeah, it is good. Well, I mean, it's there's a lot of tension and action. Wait, so what do you ask me? I'm sorry. What happens?
Law enforcement. What about Jonathan? Why did he want to join forces with him, the sheriff? Who else was part of this plot besides Kingsley?
Oh, yeah. So what happens is Kingsley joins up with the sheriff.
Yeah.
And they get all the townspeople, or a lot of the townspeople, convene at Bunny's Bar and they make a plan. Because what's happened in the meantime is that Sonny has finally died.
Which is good.
And yes, Sonny has finally died. But what this means is, like, they all know, like, everyone knows that the mobsters are going to want revenge. And they're all going to come up from Queens, like they're going to send, like, an army up from Queens. And so Kingsley has no choice but to team up with the sheriff to form almost like a local army. And what they do is they empty out the whole little town, and they arm themselves and whatever, and they prepare themselves for an onslaught. It's a lot like High Plains Drifter, just same kind of plot. Like, they're waiting for the bad guys to come in, and they're just going to take them out, you know, or whatever. And so, like, basically what happens next is a war between the mobsters and the townspeople.
It was scary, let me tell you. So now Sonny has family, so what do they tell him? How do they deal with them? Because they're not going to be happy that he's dead, and they're going to figure out something happened. So how do they deal with that?
Just like I said, they send up the entire, you know, they send up like a crack, you know, they're like a crack army of mobsters to just take the town over and just kill everybody. And they even join up with some, like I said before, like some crooked members of the state police up there, you know, and boy, do they go to war.
Well, the state police is on the take and they want the money, so I can see why.
Yep.
So
yep.
When Cora finds out that Sonny's dead, how does she convince everybody that she doesn't know when she's upset, like she really cares?
Well, it's dubious for a while because, like,
yeah,
like Kingsley's kind of like, you know, because she acts very distraught and upset about the whole thing, and Sonny's like, right, and Sonny knows that he knows she has to act upset, right? You know, like, she can't just be like skipping and, you know, whatever, and so he's like, but is she really upset, or, you know, is this an act, or is she, you know, like, is she really upset? And, like, you know, so, you know, he loves her and he knows he's desperately in love with her. But on the other hand, he doesn't trust her. You know, there's something about her that's, you know, she's not like the sweet, innocent person that she comes off to be. Especially, you know, like, if you were to show up at Loon Lake Inn and sign her guest book, like, she'd be the sweetest person on earth. But he knows she has this real dark, dark heart in her. And so he doesn't know if he can trust her or not. And towards the end of the book, like, he sees what she's capable of.
Well, you know, he could think he's, you know, in good shape, but you know what? If you write a sequel, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. No, I think this one's a one-off.
This is just one, right? Because
yeah.
If we
you know what happened
back,
was
she's scary.
What happened? Oh, she's. What happened was, like, when I handed this book in, I told you about how it came to be, and then when I handed it in, they were like, "Oh, like it's only 60,000 words. You owe us another 10,000 words. And can you do it in like a day? Not a day, but you know, practically. And so I was like, okay. And you know me, Fran, I'm a fast writer. But so
I
actually,
know.
that's when I wrote the prologue. Like, I didn't have the prologue before that, you know. And so, like, I wrote the prologue, and I wrote a bunch of stuff on the inside, and I added more to the war. So it ended up okay. Gets good reviews anyway.
I know, because I gave you one. Then you
yes,
got
you
good
did.
Reviews.
Thank you.
And anybody that
Thank
gives
you.
A bad one is going to have to answer to the queen over here. Seriously.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I interviewed somebody the other day, Gabriel Vachon, The Naming Game,
uh-huh.
and it's about the McCarthy era. The book was fantastic. So I read some of his
right.
reviews, but he's on a blog talk with Partners in
okay.
Crime that's the best. And I said, how could anybody write that? How could anybody write that about your book? I started screaming. I was going to answer the person and saying, do you understand what the book is about? Could you not understand what the person didn't
right.
understand what the McCarthy era was? I said, like, excuse me?
Right.
No one writes bad reviews
yeah.
about my people. So.
That's right.
Oh,
Brandy, give it
you don't want to start with the you don't want to start with the queen here. So who is Lieutenant
That's right.
Spencer? He's a tricky character, this guy.
He's. Like, obviously, not all the state troopers are on the take, and
yeah.
but, you know, and he comes off appearing very much, like, legit, you know, and,
yeah,
like, he shows up, you know, they're expecting to be interviewed, obviously, you know, about the, quote, accident that happened in the woods
mm-hmm.
that resulted in Sonny's death. And he comes off, like, being fairly legit, you know, and, like, he does his thing, investigates and whatever, and he shows up later on again, and, he, you know, he's basically, I got to take in, because I know exactly what you did, Kingsley. And what happens next is pretty horrifying, and Cora takes care of him, doesn't she, French? Let's just put it that way. Cora takes
She's
care
like-
of him.
I know, and I have to read up on how she does it because, you know, I need to know more information. This is really good.
Right. She,
I mean, maybe I need,
Cora takes
maybe
care of
I need to call her.
right. Yeah, she can take care of some things for you. Cora takes care of the situation, quickly diffuses it in one of the most gruesome manners possible, and then they have to, like, you know, naturally get rid of all the evidence. But you might think, like, oh, man, like, these people just killed the one good guy, you know? But what they find out is that Lieutenant Spencer was actually one of the, you know, not as good as you would have thought. So they were actually, you know, getting rid of another, you know, they were doing good in the end, is what I'm trying to say.
What can I say? So how did you create, what happens that takes them down a dangerous path? And how do you prepare for a war like that? I mean, I was like, oh, my God, I got to learn how to do this. How do you prepare to defend yourself against people that are going to try to kill you? And there's a lot of them. So how do you prepare for that? How did you create that?
Kingsley knows that they probably don't have enough people, you know, to actually do the job. So he knows he has to engage in more than just physical warfare.
Mm-hmm.
So what he does is he comes up with an idea that he got from an old friend of his who was in Vietnam to create some psychological warfare that will frighten the hell out of the mobsters when they first arrive on the scene. Mm-hmm. And what he does is he manages to procure Sonny's body from the morgue. And what he does is he sets the body up in the street on a cross. He basically crucifies it.
I know.
And he makes sure that that it's lit on fire as soon as the mobsters show up. So Big Billy shows up along with his two cohorts. His two cohorts don't want to go any further. That's how spooked they are. And Billy even shoots them dead. And so, like, it just creates this atmosphere of, like, the mobsters are not entering into a healthy place whatsoever. It's not going to be a pushover.
I don't blame you. How could you, if it was a pushover, then I wouldn't get all tense and nervous, but there's a lot that people could learn from this novel. And yeah, seriously, just think if they, you know, write out the plan and get rid of people in 5 minutes. Wow. So
my demented mind.
Yeah, I know. It's methodical. It's like, how did Vincent Zerini come up with this? I'm like, oh my God, it's scary. God, you don't want to mess with him. That's all I could tell you, people. Don't mess with Vincent Zerini. What can I tell you? So what is this, Sam, and how would that help them in their fight? What is that? How did you create that, or is that real?
What? I'm sorry, create the what?
The Sam, S-A-M. The Sam, the weapon.
Oh, the Sam missile?
Yeah.
The sheriff had been expecting this, something like this, to happen. He'd been expecting it to happen for a long time. So what the sheriff was doing was he was weaponing up. He was collecting weapons off the black market. And
that's
he was
cool.
able to collect everything. Yeah, and he was, you know, because you can do it. And it's legit. He was collecting everything from, like, he had, like, a 30 caliber machine gun to, like, tons of automatic rifles and weapons and 30-round magazines, rather. In New York State now, you can't have anything more than a 7-round magazine. But he's able to grab some now very illegal 30-round magazines and M16s, and he also even manages to grab hold of a surface-to-air missile, a shoulder-mounted surface-to-air missile, a SAM, and you only get one shot from those things. But Kingsley knows how to use it because he was, you know, Kingsley's a soldier. And so he makes it count at the right time when a helicopter's coming after him.
That is scary. So my strange question is this. He kills Sonny, right? And she takes care of somebody else, and the sheriff knows about it. So how does the sheriff justify not arresting them? Because to me, it's justified murder. They deserved it. What can I say?
Yeah, well, there's that. And everybody's guilty of something in this novel.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously it would be illegal to wage war against anybody in any case, so the sheriff is guilty of that. The sheriff knows in the end that I'm trying to say this without giving anything away.
Yeah,
the sheriff knows. The sheriff knows that although what Cora and Kingsley do in the end is bad, it's actually good for everybody because they really eliminated the last mobster in a way. You know what I mean? So like, it's all done. And the irony of the whole thing is that like, the little sleepy town of Loon. Loon Lake, the irony of the whole thing is that it actually does become almost a Las Vegas. It becomes famous for, like, the Battle of Loon Lake, you know? And, like, you know, but it's cool because Cora and Kingsley are able to, own the Loon Lake Inn from this point on, and they actually even get pregnant and all this sort of stuff, so... It ends on a good note.
I know. Well, what would have happened if the sheriff decided to, play the other way? So that would have been really bad for Kingsley and for Cora if he decided all of a sudden to have this moral compass. What would happen then?
I think they would have had to get out of that as well somehow. You know, they would have had to have done away with the sheriff. But don't forget.
I guess, yeah.
But don't forget the sheriff... the sheriff really isn't around for that much longer, you know. I mean.
No, I didn't think so.
Yeah, so, like, they're in the clear, you know. They're in the clear. I originally, when I wrote the book, I originally pictured it as one really long letter to this girl you meet early on in the book, Teresa.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you – did you read The Galley or did you – you probably read The Galley, right?
I read – no, this – yeah, the advanced reading copy, yeah, the one not for sale. I finally got it.
Okay, all right, yeah. The advanced reading copy actually contains a plot line that is absent in the finished book.
So what's absent in the book that I read that nobody knows about?
Because nobody's really going to know about it. It was originally meant to be like a long letter to Teresa.
Uh-huh.
But my editor at Polis was like, that doesn't work for me. So I was like, well, And I'm usually the type to work, you know, with the editors or whatever. So I pulled it out from that. It doesn't really affect anything, but sometimes I'm wondering if I should have left it in, but whatever, you know.
No, in the dream we're standing at the altar, me and Leslie, you have that also. There's like dream scenes on here too. How did you create those?
Oh, yeah.
And who is Aaron and Leslie? You created a whole bunch
Ellen
of
Ellen and Leslie.
There.
Yeah, his wife and daughter.
Oh, right. That's his.
Right. And, you know, in typical Vince land, you know, I was writing this book as, you know, remember I was back with my ex-wife for a while and she had once again given me the boot as I was writing this, you know. And so, like, I don't see strengths, Fran. I just write books and get it all in there. And it's a lot cheaper. He's very upset with all this stuff, and so he dreams about it, you know, and he's also upset because she was cheating on him and all this sort of stuff. It's on his subconscious as well. It plays with him. So that's how those come about. I'm big on dream scenes, but there's another thing. And it's funny because editors really dislike dream scenes. And because a lot of editors will say, oh, well, this, like, readers will skip them. And I think that's bullshit. I think people read them. I mean, why wouldn't you read the dream scene? Like, I would, you know?
It depends. It depends if it doesn't overpower the whole novel. Because, you know me, I read too many books.
Right.
And after a while, it's like, you know which ones I really don't like? And thank God you don't do it. The ones that annoy me the most at times is when you write, well, chapter one is this person, chapter two is that person, chapter three is that person, chapter four. It drives me crazy because I don't lose the plot, but go like, okay, chapter one ended with this person and then the next person, and then what happened to the one? I go, oh, God, I hate that.
I do too. And I actually feel like that's like a really outdated method of writing. Really, I'm going to really sound like I'm using an SAT word here, but really Dickensian in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they're just creating like this huge world because the newspapers are printing your serialized novel and you're getting like a penny a word or whatever. But yeah, I don't like that either. The closest I come to it is like the book I just finished, Paradox Lake, and handed in to Chip. That one's it's a first-person point of view, but interjected is the point of view of the bad guy, you know, like in small vignette-style chapters, which I've done in a lot of books, like The Remains and The Ashes and stuff like that. So
that kind of works. Before I forget, because I don't want to forget, Monday should be extremely interesting. Monday I'm going to talk about Hollywood and the author with Stephen J. Schwartz, Lee Goldberg, Lawrence
Lee.
Block. Yep, uh-huh.
Wow.
Lawrence Block, Alan Jacobson, and Tess Gerrinson. And
quite the crew.
I was asked to do it. I didn't volunteer. They volunteered me. And I created the questions. We'll see what happens. It should be really interesting. And then on Wednesday, Philip Margolin, R.G. Belsky, John Land, Alan Topol, strong female characters. And on the 24th, the author of Murmur of the Bees. And to end the month, and I'm not doing anything in July, people, except relaxing, coming to the Philofest, I hope, and everything else. The 27th, W.H. Wheaton, Emily Eternal. That is a book that everybody got to read. It's Artificial Consciousness, and she's not real, but she's real, and everybody wants one of her, let me tell you. So that is it. And then I start back August 6th with someone we all know and love, Carter Wilson, The Dead Girl in 2A. This book was scared the daylights out of me. So tell us about Kingsley and how did he survive the Iranians in jail? Because he's, you know, pretty good too, before we ask the other final questions.
Yeah. Kingsley is an ex-Army Ranger, so, like, he knows how to take care of himself. But the Aryans surrounded him and nearly killed him when they bullwhipped him with homemade whips in the showers. And as soon as he got out of the infirmary, he knew he'd be their slave unless he did something about it. And so, like, the corrections officers liked Kingsley. And they were like, we'll turn our backs if you take care of those guys. And we'll even shut down the power for 5 minutes or whatever. And so they helped him out, and, like, Kingsley single-handedly kills these guys in the showers. And he does so with great drama.
He does, and I think these things really happen in real life, too, which is really scary.
Sure.
I think they do also, yeah. And, I mean, I'm sure there are people like Cora that decide, I'm going to pay somebody to kill my husband and just get another one. And basically, Kingsley needs to hope that she doesn't, you know, decide to get somebody else. What can I tell him?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was scary and bloody. So tell us how you created the final scene and Cora and Kingsley. Are they really a match made in forever? Well, no.
I think so. Like I said, they set themselves up at the Loon Lake Inn. It's a successful place. They've become famous. There's a book being written about them and a movie coming up. And, and they're pregnant. And, you know, the little cabin on the lake, they're, like, expanding it. And I think they are. But even though they've done what they've done, I don't see them as ever doing anything like that again, unless they need to.
You never know, but would she ever double cross him, or if he double cross her? Was he too afraid of her?
I don't think so. I don't know. I picture them just sort of living. Like, my girlfriend says, like, oh my gosh, you need to write a Hallmark ending one of these times. I know it wouldn't be, but in a way, this book does sort of have a Hallmark ending, in a way. I mean, if you think about
it. Yeah,
and so.
The last line, you'll figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I picture them, like, living more or less, you know, like, the way they are. You know, I don't want to get too much away, but I just picture them, you know, like, certainly there's no. We're not going to see a sequel, you know.
No, that would sort of kill it, I think, if there was a sequel.
Yeah, it would.
And then they might come after both of us. You know, you never know. Can't have that happen.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Kingsley's a cool guy. Right.
Well, you know, it's funny. Somebody, I won't say who, read My Silent Voices, people that came out on Monday. Hint, it came out Monday. And
great book.
They said the same thing. Like, how did you make it so that it's so sad? I said, it's not that it's sad. It's just that some people deserve to be there. And after today, I can figure out who else is going to be there. And some people just tell their stories, and it's sad. And that's just me. Yeah, well, I went to the cemetery to visit my sister, and that's when I said to her, if you could tell me why you died and why you left me with all these people, what would you tell me? And I looked at the rest of the graves, too. So, you know, you never know where your ideas are going to come from. And
That's
your
right.
ideas are really good. So, here's a good one. One of my brilliant questions. What advice would you give readers the next time the doorbell rings and the postman rings more than once? Because mine constantly comes to the door and says he won't give me my books unless I give him his books for his kids. No, I'm serious. That is a fact. It's a true fact. Yeah, he's waiting for more books for his children. I just brought him some, so this way he'll give me my books, maybe if I'm lucky.
that's hilarious. That's hilarious.
It is. Yeah, I know.
I don't know, friend. All I can say is just beware the postman who shows up and falls in love with you.
Yeah, well, you have to make sure it's really your real postman. I know the I give my books to the people in the building or anybody else. And to be very honest, some of my books don't get to me because people take them. if he doesn't put them in the mailbox, sometimes I actually don't get them. And then the publisher said, "Why didn't you read it?" I go, "Because I didn't want to. Because I didn't feel like it. No, I didn't get it." And
no, I didn't get it. That's happening.
Yeah, well, I'm too popular sometimes. So
you are.
What you never know. So what else do you want to hear, talk about this book? I mean, seriously, how do you come to write something like that from start to scratch? How do you figure out the plot from the beginning before we ask what's next? Seriously, how do you come up with this stuff? Because every book that you write is different. There's no two that are the same.
Now, I'm actually not sure. yeah, I know that's not the answer you want or any of your audience wants, but I always have a general idea of what's going to go on. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of, I never get like stuck because this plot, revealed itself to me, you know? And I know that's totally cliched and all this sort of stuff, but like for instance, okay, In the book I just finished, Paradox, like, she's a sculptor, right? And she is sculpting a face. And she's like, I don't even know where the time goes when I'm sculpting. Like, my hands just move. And I don't even realize what I'm doing until it's over, until, like, an hour has passed or something. And she said, I'm more like a conduit for this creation that's happening. And so it's kind of like that. It kind of just, it develops into something. And, like, I know some writers who will say, like, oh, you know what, I was three quarters into the book before I realized this plot isn't working or whatever. Like, I would never allow that to happen to me because, like, first of all, I edit as I go. And second of all, I would never allow something to go off the rails that much. Sometimes I purposely go off the rails if I think it works for the book. Like, there are some editors or, who are like, up, can't do that. That's off the rails, or whatever. And I'm like, whatever. Like some people love that stuff, if it goes off the rails a little bit. And I think Caretaker's Wife can be, it's like verging on going off the rails in some parts. But I love that stuff, And I think it keeps people entertained, and afraid and on the edge of their seat and all that stuff, but in general, no, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I mean, you just the title itself, because you really don't know what kind of caretaker, you don't know what she's up to. And the title could be any kind of caretaker, could be anywhere, any place.
Right.
I mean, why did you choose Orchard Grove and why did you choose Loon Lake?
Like Orchard Grove, in terms of the book, because I lived on a street called Orchard Grove. And I had found out that Orchard Grove used to be an apple orchard. And there were still some apple trees hanging around there. And after like a developer bought it, like they killed all the apple trees. And now the apple trees that survive and that give apples are like deformed and gross. And you can't eat them.
Ew.
And I just thought that was a very interesting metaphor for the plot of the book. Which is also Orchard Grove is a very James and Keynesian inspired book as well. And inspired by some stuff that was going on in my life as well at the time. But and so I decided in this book in Caretaker's Wife, like, why don't I have him living on Orchard Grove when he comes home and his wife and daughter are gone. And, and so I thought that would be perfect, bring that kind of back. I always try to, like, connect my books whenever I can in one way or another. Certainly my detective series, like, everybody knows everyone, and they work with each other and stuff like that. They kind of create, like, a little Vince world.
Well, usually, That is true. So, what, are you going to do any more Chase books? Because I like those. Those
yes.
are really good for young people to read. So, are you going to do those?
Yes. Yeah, I have. I was writing so many of them that people weren't catching up, because I think there's like 12 now or 13 or something like that. And so, yes, there is a second young Chase Baker, is full-length one, will be coming out in a few months. And in September, I'm heading over to Eastern Europe, and I'm going to Chernobyl, believe it or not. And I'm going to be basing some sort of plot around that area there for adult Chase Baker. So that book, I'll probably have a new adult Chase Baker in the spring of 2020, something like that.
Well, what's next for you? What am I getting soon so I could put it in my schedule?
There's a couple reprints coming out, like Murder by Moonlight is another, the second edition of that comes out at the end of the month, and then there'll be a Moonlight, Dick Moonlight PI bundle, and I think after that is, oh my gosh, what's after that? Either the new Dick Moonlight or Primary Termination. And then I have an anthology I edited for Down and Out that comes out in the fall as well. And I actually have some news, but I can't really announce it yet, but I am signing a new book deal. We're just waiting to finalize what the numbers are going to be and all that sort of stuff. And so I'll be announcing that pretty soon. And that's for a book I wrote last year called The Girl Who Wasn't There. And I think the deal will also include Paradox Lake. Fran, I got more books coming out than I can even recall off the top of my head.
So do you, this book that I just came out with, I didn't realize, it's not self-published, it's independently published. Is that better than going with a traditional?
This one's published, This one's with Polish Books. It is because, some of the independent houses do a really good job, and it's good to have the book in hardcover. And if you're self-publishing, you could get it out in hardcover, I guess. But Polish is able to get you the trade reviews and get you in the libraries and do all that stuff. So. Like I always say, I'm a hybrid author. I do both, and for me, it just makes a lot of sense, because if you're just doing everything on your own, then you're kind of writing on your own imprint. You're just sort of writing in a vacuum. But if you're able to sign contracts, number one, you get it in advance, which always helps, and number two, you get the trade reviews, and number three, if you're coming out in hardcover, you're going to be in the bookstores. And four, you get a much, much, much better shot at getting some Hollywood attention. And in fact, right now, The Detonator just got we got interest from Sylvester Stallone on The Detonator, so we're hoping to sign something with them as well.
I hope so, for your sake, because wait till everybody listens to my show, Hollywood versus the Author, on Monday. And you'll learn what happened to Tess Gerrenson, and she had to sue Hollywood. You'll learn what happened to Michael Connelly. Unfortunately, he's not going to be on the show. Lee Goldberg, his experience wasn't as bad. But Lawrence Block, I read two of his Bernie books because he sent them to me, and I cracked up laughing. And to be honest, they cast the person that was the wrong person for the show. Wrong person.
Yeah.
What can I say? So thank
you
so very much.
Thanks, Fran. Thanks for having me again.
I read his new one, and you got to read it, because the ending, you'll appreciate it. It was really, I've never read a Matthew Scott book. This is like
they're great.
Different. This is not really where he's got a murder. It's like just something else. And you have to read it. It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. Yeah. And they sent me a hardcover book, too, so what can I say? But thank you so much.
Awesome.
I put the link
out, Fran.
And whenever you want another interview, just let me know. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thanks, Fran. Bye.